Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Halloween 2013 and some appropriate music for the occasion ahead. This week, conversations with Rosanna Gamson, artistic director of Layla Means Night, a provocative new work based on the Scheherazade legend that creates a sort of Middle Eastern haunted house at ODC Theater. ODC's theater director Christy Bullenbrook, also in studio. Live Persian music performed in studio as well by Human Pormedi Piraye Porafar and vocalist Alireza Shamohammadi. Plus conductor Joshua Gerson and Bernard Herrmann expert Stephen Smith talk about the live San Francisco Symphony accompaniments this week of classic Hitchcock films. Peter Robinson will cap things off with some autumnal Shakespeare and some background on the Halloween holiday and traditions. Stay with us. Not our usual theme music for Open Air this week once again, instead provided by master Persian musicians Human Pormedi Piraye Porafar and Alireza Shamohammadi. We'll hear more from them a little bit later as they're providing the musical element for the world premiere of Layla Means Night, a provocative and immersive dance theater work by Los Angeles-based company Rosanna Gamson Worldwide. Layla Means Night, loosely based on the frame tale of Scheherazade in 1001 Nights, occupies the whole of ODC Theater as audiences are invited into performances on all three floors of that great new structure, in the lobby, the studios, hallways, as well as the Broadway Theater. Rosanna Gamson joins me now. She's a native New Yorker who comes from a family fairly steeped in the performing arts. Her father, Arnold, was an opera conductor. Her mother, Annabel Gamson, was a dancer and choreographer. And Rosanna studied and created in New York before moving to Los Angeles in 1997, founding Rosanna Gamson Worldwide. And she's currently teaching dance composition at CalArts. She's also joined by ODC's theater director, Christy Bullenbrook. She's a UCLA grad with an extensive background in dance performance, arts education, and arts management. Christy, Rosanna, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you, David.
Thanks.
So, this is quite an event. Let's start with what this title means. Layla Means Night. How did you come up with this title, Rosanna?
Layla means night in Arabic, and I didn't want to call it Scheherazade I think the real point of the story is that certain things are untranslatable and certain things we find an equivalent for to say this means that. But so it sort of points to the idea that things are not what they seem.
And where did you first come up with the idea of using the Scheherazade as the basis for the story?
A million years ago, when I was living in New York, the World Trade Tower was bombed with a van bomb. And there was a huge amount of specifically anti-Islamic feeling and anti-immigrant feeling. And there was a lot of violence in New York following that, where people were saying those people a lot. And that was interesting to me. This is something that's interested me all along, is what we mean when we say, you know, those people. And I started investigating Islamic art, actually. And I went to Morocco, and I ended up going to Turkey, and I started looking at Islamic architecture, and it's a very, very different way of conceiving about space and composition and spirituality, and it was something I knew so little about and had no frame of reference to whatsoever. So it really was an adventure, in an aesthetic adventure, as well as, you know, going really cool places and having really interesting experiences. It was also changed my brain. Mm. And I thought seeing the way other people think abstractly, how those people think so differently about the world, it was astonishing to me. So mm. I was trying to find some small way to illuminate my discovery about another culture, not the other culture per se, but my response and my reaction to learning something so new.
And this, the area is such, I mean, it's the cradle of civilization, and it's a shame that because of these attacks that it seems like the whole civilization has been, for lack of a better word, hijacked. And it's wonderful that we get back to the fundamental arts and the rich history that is involved in that area of the world.
Yeah, and I think also then the more I learned the difference between Arabic culture and Persian culture and the sort of things that we sort of lump together into a big lump that is not really that specific. It's just kind of that we're not very educated, I think, is the story. And so the Layla means night is just sort of like, by the way, this means that. And actually, the piece became much more Persian because I saw the Lian Ensemble perform and I fell in love with them. So then it shifted the story in a totally different direction. And then I started investigating a whole other very rich cultural tradition that I didn't know anything about, which is not Arabic. And so there's another layer about conquest and empire and absorbing language. And there are a lot of countries that have their own languages, Turkey, Iran, Greece, that retained a language through the Ottoman Empire coming sweeping through. And even though the cultures were absorbed, there is this idea of retaining your voice and keeping your language and keeping your stories in this very insidious, seductive way by saying, but they're so beautiful, don't you want to hear them?
Mm. That's Rosanna Gamson. She's in the creator of Layla Means Night at ODC Theater, being presented through this Sunday with a 7 p.m. performance on Sunday. She's joined by Christy Bolingbroke, who is the theater director for ODC. Christy, I'm wondering, this event is taking up the entire building. How did you have that in mind, or was this Rosanna's idea?
Rosanna definitely came to us with this idea in mind. But one of the things that I think intrigued me was exactly this curiosity and thirst for discovery and sharing that with an audience. Because I think, you know, everything we do does not take up the entire building. We do put on just regular old shows where people come into the theater, and still to this day, some of the scary things that you can say to people would be, let's go to a contemporary dance performance, right? And they're like, you know. And we're really trying to cultivate an audience and an opportunity, regardless of the artists that we bring in, that audiences come in with a curiosity, an open mind. What do they notice? And the thing that appealed me to be able to invest and share in this experience with Rosanna and the team was I was familiar with Rosanna's work from when I lived down in Los Angeles. So I knew the quality was there. I knew there'd be great craftsmanship, even not having ever seen all of it in its entirety, because we really just saw that together this week when we got in the space. But I really appreciated the opportunity to change the framework for audiences, so they would be able to notice different things. So we would be able to entice them in different ways than just sitting in a proscenium theater. Mm. And we are a unique space that actually has three studios and a conference room and a green room and a theater and a soon-to-be cafe and a lobby that could actually help realize this vision. And so that's been an exciting experiment for us, too.
Well, I see your marketing people are at work because, you know, you mentioned the going to something that might be off-putting as contemporary dance. You say that tickets include food and beverages. So there you go. I mean, I think you'll draw some crowds right there for that.
It is. It's a part of the experience. I think culturally, food and beverage is a part of a lot of different cultural experiences. And really working not unlike how Rosanna's been making space for the Persian music, for her experience with traditional Persian culture, not trying to appropriate it, but let it infuse the performance that we see and the different choreography and the framing and settings. We're also trying to let it infuse the experience food and beverage wise, but also are not saying that any of it is a traditional Persian banquet.
Rosanna, did you have particular sounds in mind, or did you just leave the music element to these fine musicians, which we're going to hear shortly?
I wanted to say one more thing about food and beverage.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Please, that's perfect.
Because it's very strong opinions.
Yeah, well, or great interest, perhaps.
Yes.
I want people to feel like they're coming to a dinner party more than they're coming to something that they sit back and watch, but something that's more interactive. So we were also trying to have things smell beautiful or interesting and have things taste and... When you come in, there's the ODC Dance Jam, which is the teen company that's connected to the to ODC, and they bring you in and they wash your hands for you. And so there's a tactile... So we were looking for ways to engage all five senses all the way through the whole evening so that you do... and you do have to climb stairs and go around and go down the little back alleys, and it should feel be... I think people don't recognize that seeing and hearing is a physical act. You're doing something with your body when you see and taste and touch and smell. It's not passive. So
yeah, you're not just in a straight back chair watching a performance. Yeah, you're actually very centrally involved.
Yeah, sit back and relax is like the worst thing I think that we can do. It's more about like, no, sit in and be present.
And it is also hopefully keeps people, you know, feel more. I think the idea of spectator is going away and the idea of participant is coming in theater, in all theater, and in whether including music. So I didn't say anything like, can I have it more like this specifically? The thing that's been really fun is I say, okay, this is the idea, and then they say, okay, well, what about this? And then I say, yes, that's great. And so far, when we both think it's lousy, we haven't had any disagreement about like, oh, this is beautiful. Okay, this is ugly. So we seem to be in great agreement about that. So they've been really responsive and really flexible. And the dancers are very nice people. And so...
How many dancers are involved in the production?
Whew. Okay, so there's six. There's a chorus of six women dancers who are Rosanna Gamson Worldwide dancers, and then there's sort of four characters, two actors, a performance poet, Niloufar Talibi, and another dancer who doesn't speak, who's a silent character, who only dances. So that's 10, mm-hmm. And then there's 13 kids, and then we also count in the performance team six docent host people,
sure,
who take you around.
They'd be your house manager in any other performance.
Right, so instead of 1,001 nights, we're talking about 1,001 characters involved in putting this together.
Exactly.
It was initially conceived that it would be sort of a one-to-one performer-to-audience ratio. But we're about half.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we're at about half.
Well, let's hear some more of this terrific music that you... We have three extraordinary musicians with us in studio. Houman Pourmehdi, who's playing tonbak, which is a Persian goblet-shaped drum. We'll hear some music and then we'll talk about their instruments. Piraye Purafar is playing the tar, which is a form of lute. And Alireza Shah Mohammadi is going to be doing some vocal work here. Here's some live music here in the studios of KALW on Open Air.
manu manu mo hey ajabo 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 manchin 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 zindo hazaron hazaron manu mo manu mo manu mo hey ajabo 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 manchin Bede, bede, arbate ra Dasmane, vardahana سی سوی گریبان کسی دست برم هر نفسی سوی گریبان کسی تا بخراشد رخ من تا بخراشد رخ من تا
That was vocalist Alireza Shah Mohammadi performing with Human Pormedi and Piraye Porafar. Beautiful music. Alireza, I'm wondering if you could tell us what we just heard. It's obviously telling a story. What was the story we were hearing?
Actually, I prefer to pass the Human to tell the story.
You may well do that, Human.
Well, this song is a composition of Mr. Shah Mohammadi and based on Rumi poetry. It's basically talking about this between all this me and you and all this world of materialism and everything that we attach, for example, iPhone, iPad, he's saying that what am I doing here? And then I wanted to be separated from who am I? What am I saying here? What am I doing? Because everybody is so attached to the world and the material.
So it's Sufi poetry, you mentioned.
Exactly, from Rumi.
Wow, so it has resonance for today, absolutely.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So how did you choose the music to go with? Did you see the choreography first? Did you see the setting and said, oh, we should play X and such a number?
Well, interesting. Subject with working with Rosanna, that we start talking about this about 3 years ago, and then she came to us from the show that we were doing in UCLA Live in Medea, and then she came and said, I have this idea, so let's do it. So pretty much we are on the same track, same path. As she presented her idea to us, we somehow it works together. You know, I mean, we are so fortunate and lucky that, you know, we can work like this.
Actually, I want to add some point. Improvisation is a crucial part of Persian music. And since we grew up in that culture, we can, somehow be abstract. And we are flexible to make melodies based on acts in the moment, and that's why this music is works with this abstract theater. I think this is it's my opinion.
Interesting. That's Ali Raza Shah Mohammadi. He was vocalist. And tell us a little bit about the instrument you were also playing in that piece.
I played sitar, not sitar, but sitar.
Okay.
Yes, it has four strings, and is smaller than tar, and that's it.
Let's play those four separate strings so we can hear what they sound like, and then together.
This is the first tonic. It could be dominant or subdominant, mm-hmm. and again repeat of tonic. And tonic or,
Opening
hand
strings.
Yes.
Okay.
Low octave.
And the neck of the instrument, it looks like there are frets, but interestingly, the frets are made by string wrapped around the neck of the instrument. So does that mean that those frets are adjustable, or is that just happens to be the way they're created onto the instrument?
Yes, it's adjustable.
Fascinating.
Yes.
We're also joined...
Actually, I don't have to talk about instrument because I'm not professional in instrument in front of Piraye Purafa. She is professional in this stuff. I'm just vocalist.
Well, you sound terrific. You should not apologize at all. Piraye, of course, virtuoso playing here going on.
Thank you so much.
Can you tell us about the instrument you're using?
I'm playing tar, has six strings tuned in pair, and the two upper strings we tune it differently. It depends to different mood that we are playing, but basically what we tune is C, sometimes the middle strings F, and sometimes the middle string G, but the upper two depends to different mood because we have 12 systems and then we are tune it differently.
Mm-hmm. And let's hear those individual strings and then together. Fascinating. It's almost like a banjo sound for an American banjo
that,
sound.
Yeah, I've heard that from many of my friends,
Well, let's hear. We also need to get our drummer involved here. You used a hand drum for a moment there, Human. And you also have with you a tonbak. Could you tell us about the tonbak?
Sure, tonbak is an old instrument drum, sort of Persian classical music. It's been in Persian music for many, many years, and then especially past 50 years has been proved through the new players and new school of tonbak playing. So it's the main drum in Persian classical music, and then it has one piece wood. It's one piece wood and made of walnut, old walnut tree, and you know.
And is the drum itself hollow? The tonback.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the difference between this drum, the other drums, and like Arabic tonback, in tonback we have a sharp edge, so we have more contrast on the sound. The low and then the high has more contrast together. So it requirement, it's a very strong requirement in Persian classical music to have this much of contrast.
And of course, the contrast is assisted by how you hit the drum itself,
exactly.
Whether a finger
towards
or
the edge, more higher, and then towards the middle, it gets lower and lower, mm-hmm. and then mid-range in between.
Could you show us just a little bit of technique of how you would be using your hand in different ways to create the different
sure.
sounds there?
So this is basically the edge of the tonback.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Both hand. So the middle of the drum. We use basically 10 fingers. It's a little bit different than hand drumming. It's more of a finger drumming than hand drumming. And it's because, you know, we are not slapping the drum only. It's, you know, one by one, finger, single finger. So everything has been used in this drum. So the interesting part of it is it's one skin, and, you know, then you have no choice. It's not like tabla. There's no two choices for us, is only one, but that idea made us to work harder a little bit, you know, and then create more techniques than to use all the nails, fingers, everything, 10 fingers, everything,
right,
to create sound.
Fascinating. Well, let's hear just a brief one more selection, if you'd be so kind to offer us a little bit more music, and then we'll wrap things
sure.
up.
Sure.
Excellent. What are we going to hear?
The composition is by Humam Pour Mehdi, and poem is Rumi again.
Excellent.
چه خورده ای بگو باز چه خورده ای بگو مست و خراب می روی مست و خراب می روی خانه به خانه کو به کو خانه کو به کو خانه به خانه کو به کو خانه به خانه کو به کو
That's music from master Persian musicians Humam Pourmehdi on tonbak, Pirayeh Purafar on the tar, and Alireza Shah Mohammadi on vocals.
زلف کرا گشودی حلقه به حلقه مو به مو حلقه به حلقه مو به مو حلقه به حلقه مو به مو
They're performing for the world premiere of Layla Means Night, a provocative and immersive dance theater work by Los Angeles-based company Rosanna Gamson Worldwide. They're at the Odyssey Theater through Sunday, an immersive performance. We were also joined by Rosanna Gamson, the choreographer, and Christy Bolingbroke, Odyssey Theater Director. Information at odcdance.org/Layla Means Night. Well, it is Halloween 2013. Have you had your shower today? That iconic music from the classic film Psycho opens this next segment here on Open Air, and I've got two guests that were instrumental in bringing the San Francisco Symphony's Hitchcock Week to fruition, going on right now at Davies Symphony Hall. Joshua Gerson makes his San Francisco conducting debut in these presentations. He made his conducting debut at age 11 with the Greater Bridgeport Youth Orchestra in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And now, at the ripe old age of 29, he's been working with Michael Tilson Thomas as his assistant conductor for the New World Symphony and has worked with such established composers as John Adams, Christopher Rouse, Stephen Mackey, and his teacher, Michael Gandolfi. I'm also joined by producer and journalist Stephen Smith, who is the author of the biography A Heart at Fire's Center, The Life and Music of Bernard Herrmann, winner of the ASCAP Deems Taylor Award. Stephen, Joshua, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. Well, this is quite a week for you guys, especially for you, Joshua. But that music we just heard was heard last night in Davies Hall. I understand it wasn't originally part of the mix of the original film, or at least it wasn't intended to that classic shower scene to be orchestrated.
Well, that's true. The shower scene was written in spite of Alfred Hitchcock's instructions to Bernard Herrmann, and that really encapsulates their relationship. It was so close that Benny, as his friends called him, felt perfectly comfortable ignoring what the director had told him to do. Herrmann wrote a score entirely for strings, very unusual, to create what he later said was a black-and-white sound for the black-and-white film. And the only direction Hitchcock gave was, please don't write any music for the shower scene. I just want the screams, I want the knife, I want the water running. And Hitchcock was extremely sensitive and brilliant about the use of sound. Well, Herrmann thought there was no harm in writing something since he had what he thought was a good idea. And it was such a good idea that it may be the most imitated piece of film music ever written now. John Williams' Jaws theme has overtaken it, but certainly that shower music is famous. And at the recording session for the Psycho score, after the other cues were played, Benny reportedly said to Hitchcock, "You know, Hitch, I did write music for the shower scene. May I play it for you?" And they played it back, and Hitchcock said, "Well, of course, that's the way we will have it." And Benny, being Benny, he couldn't resist saying, "But Hitch, you said you didn't want any music." And Hitchcock replied, "Improper suggestion."
Improper suggestion.
And Herrmann loved to tell that story. And so Hitchcock really trusted Herrmann implicitly through films like Psycho and Vertigo, North by Northwest, 8 collaborations in all.
Stephen, how did you first get interested in his music?
Well, like many other people, I grew up watching these films, and it's remarkable when you think that Herrmann started his film career. His first movie was Citizen Kane. directed by his good friend Orson Welles. They both came over from radio in New York, made this movie. It changed their lives. Herman won an Oscar for his second film score for The Devil and Daniel Webster. And so I grew up watching films like that. And then Taxi Driver, Herman's final film, completed the night he died on Christmas Eve of 1975. So it was this incredible career. And, of course, his name is so unusual. Those two R's and those two N's and Herman kept catching my eye on things like The Twilight Zone and all the Hitchcock films and these amazing movies from the 40s to the mid-70s.
Well, speaking of The Twilight Zone, I remember distinctly Little Girl Lost, the episode that's such creepy music, and I had the great fortune a couple years ago under John Kendall Bailey to perform that music, and the reason that's so effective is his use of orchestration. I mean, four bass flutes, four harps, it's just extraordinary, the sounds that he gets using those instruments, and this beautiful viola d'amore.
Exactly. You cannot hum a lot of catchy Bernard Herrmann themes, but you will remember his scores partly because of the distinct orchestrations he created for each film and partly because of his brilliant use of these short musical figures that he would repeat, and Vertigo is a great example of that. I'm sure Joshua can tell us much more about the effectiveness of that score.
Mm-hmm. Joshua, talk about the orchestration that he's using, though, for these film scores.
Well, and Herman uses quite a big orchestra, actually. Certainly a big orchestra than you see most film scores using these days. Really a full symphony orchestra. He seemed to love the flutes and clarinets, especially. He uses five clarinet players in both North by Northwest and in Vertigo. There's three clarinets and two bass clarinets, which is pretty spectacular. And you do actually hear this clarinet choir used quite frequently throughout the film. In Psycho, I think we mentioned that he only uses a string orchestra, and we have some theories as to why he only used the strings. There may have been some practical reasons why. But I think it's amazing in the Psycho score how he's able to achieve so many different effects with just the string ensemble. Of course, the famous shower scene music with sort of that stabbing motion you get from these high-pitched strings and these sort of constant down bows they're creating. But all throughout the score, the use of pizzicato, and there's one spot where he actually has all the strings strumming their instruments like guitars, and he has them play over the bridge to get this very squeaky, ethereal sound, and sure, the effects he's able to achieve just using the string orchestra is quite impressive.
How did Psycho go last night?
Fantastic. The orchestra was great. The audience seemed to love it. They seem to laugh more than you'd think they would laugh at a movie like Psycho. But
they laughed in all the right places, though. Because,
right.
And I think they're the places Hitchcock wanted people to laugh the second time they saw it, when Norman Bates says, "Mother isn't quite herself today." Things like that get a big laugh now.
Things have gotten into the camp factor.
But I think Hitchcock always said it was a black comedy. And the first time, of course, you have no idea. But the second time you see it, it's full of lines like that.
We were also talking that it's this sort of... it's the kind of movie and the humor that you don't really get sitting by yourself watching it, but when you're sitting in a room full of people, the jokes are a lot easier to laugh at and laugh with people.
Well, you brought up an interesting question to me, was like, how was it projected? I mean, obviously you had to strip out the music, but we were hearing the dialogue. You're only hearing the dialogue? How was that done?
You'd have to ask the producers of the show. They could tell you a lot more technically than I could, but as far as I'm aware, they just take the soundtrack and they're able to strip the music away. It was recorded in such a way that they can find the music track and just sort of take it out of the film and leave the dialogue and all the sound effects. So you hear everything you would hear in the film, except the orchestra's playing the music instead of
So how are the cues working for you? Are you studying the actual film first and then going and matching the music?
This is where it gets interesting for me. In the present day, usually when film scores are recorded, the conductor and the musicians have a click track. They have a set of headphones and they literally have a metronome playing the beats for them, so they know exactly where each measure is supposed to line up. They didn't have this back in the 50s and 60s, and we don't have this for this show. So all I have is a clock. I have a clock in front of me, and it's an analog clock. It's not even a digital clock. So, and the second hand goes around smoothly. It doesn't even tick. So it's the least useful clock you really could ask for in some ways. And I have timings written in the score over a certain moment in music. It's this time. You know, it's 6 minutes and 18 seconds is this point, and then 6 minutes and 22 seconds is four beats later. And it's my job to make sure that the music is lining up with the time on the clock, which should line up subsequently with the moment in the film the music is supposed to be played to. And it is very, very tricky because the film obviously cannot adjust to the orchestra. That once the film starts playing, it goes.
Right.
And so the orchestra has to adjust to the film. And it is my job to keep the orchestra, try and set the right tempo so the music is exactly where it should be. And if I feel as if we're phasing out a little bit, getting too fast, too slow, it's my responsibility to fix the problem and bring the orchestra back to where it's supposed to be. It's a huge challenge. It's a much different challenge than, say, conducting a Brahms symphony or something like that with an orchestra, where they're obviously very difficult in itself.
Well, especially in rehearsal, if you stop the orchestra, you've also got to back up the film and find the right spot to restart.
Right, of course. So. Well, luckily we have some great producers and technicians back there who really did a great job with that. So when we did a run through and one number here didn't go so great, I just said, can we please just do that cue again? And they went right back to it, and we were able to do it again. But, of course, you know, the orchestra is so professional, and you know, everybody involved in this project is so great that we didn't make too many mistakes that we have to go back and fix.
The way it's set up, can the orchestra actually see any of the film that's going on, or is it?
I think depending on where you're sitting, yes.
Yeah.
The screen is really over the middle of the orchestra. It's right over the orchestra. So anybody sitting in the front, the violin section, I caught a couple of them peeking back at certain moments, but unfortunately the percussionists and the brass players are behind the screen. So
Yeah,
they're out of luck, unfortunately.
So we talked about what already happened, Psycho. Let's talk about what's to come. Tonight at 7:30, Todd Wilson will be performing music to accompany Hitchcock's early film, The Lodger, A Story of the London Fog. And then tomorrow at 8 is the classic Vertigo. Let's talk about that score a little bit. Different from The Psycho in terms of it being more fully orchestrated.
Yes, very different. And a movie that in its own time was not fully appreciated. Reviews were mixed. Box office was so-so. Bernard Herrmann later said that in America, people thought Vertigo referred to a backache or something. They didn't know what it meant.
And just like, coming next, angina.
Yes, exactly. And Paramount Pictures that made the film, they hated the title, and they really wanted Hitchcock to use a different one. It was called From Among the Dead when the movie was being filmed, which is the title of the book it's based on.
And the Walt Disney Pictures.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And Paramount even hired Livingston and Evans, the team that had written Que Sera Sera for another Hitchcock film very successfully, The Man Who Knew Too Much. They hired them to write a song called Vertigo that was going to go possibly over the main titles. Happily, cooler heads prevailed, and instead we have this brilliant prelude of Bernard Herrmann's that tells you immediately what the entire film is about, emotionally at least.
That's nice, because I'm just my mind's distracted thinking of like a James Bond kind of theme.
Exactly.
Going from Vertigo. I don't think that would work.
No.
In hindsight. And the orchestration, again, the harmonies that are used in Vertigo really reflect the psychological craziness that's going on in James Stewart's head and the psychological play between the characters.
Sure. I think the obvious influence here, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it is Wagner, and particularly Tristan and Isolde. There's just these two chords, this motive you hear, this two-bar motive from the second half of the movie on, over and over and over again, and there's this unfulfilled longing, the sensation that I think the music really, really helps create that absolutely correlates to what's going on in you know, Jimmy Stewart's mind and what's happening to him throughout the second half of the film. And it's absolutely taken right from Tristan. Those first two bars of Tristan, it's almost borderline plagiarism.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I would jump in and say that to me this is the genius of Bernard Herrmann, is that it isn't plagiarism in that it's not the same notes, but he is deliberately evoking something that if people know music, they will get the reference to the Liebestod, the love death of Wagner. I mean, that's what Vertigo is about. And he's telling us that the story of Vertigo is connected to this larger myth. But if you don't know that music, he's writing music that is absolutely dead on what the character is feeling emotionally, and he is making you feel it. And that's what I think made Bernard Herrmann great, and what he said the first job of the composer was to do in film was to get inside the drama and be the communicating link between the audience and the film so that you felt what they were feeling. He wasn't just illustrating the scenery. He's making you get inside the heads and feel the beating hearts of those characters.
And I think he's so smart in that obviously Wagner was one of the masters of doing exactly that, and you can tell that he was more than aware of that and studied that and was able to bring that influence very successfully to his own score.
So, Stephen Smith, in your research on this relationship, special relationship between Herman and Hitchcock, was that ever discussed early on, or did they have a discussion of the type of music that was going to be a part of the film, or was that strictly up to Herman?
It was, I would say, overall, strictly up to Herman. But in terms of placement, there are remarkable notes that survive in which Hitchcock details the soundtrack of the movie. Just as he storyboarded every shot and worked everything out visually, he created detailed sound notes for every scene talking about what he wanted to hear, and really almost like a composer himself orchestrating the soundtrack of natural sounds of voices. But then he will indicate when the music is going to take over, and he'll say things like, for that famous the scene we were just talking about, the climax of Vertigo, the scene d'amour, Hitchcock writes something like, Mr. Herman will have something to say here, so you know, please pull back the effects. And sure enough, Hitchcock gave Herman minutes of the film, really the key sequence of the film he gives to Benny, and Herman loved to say that Hitchcock said to him, we'll just have the camera and you.
This will actually be the world premiere of a live performance of Vertigo tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. And then Saturday is a Hitchcock Greatest Hits with the great Eva Marie Saint, actress as host, Joshua once again conducting, and a variety of films being presented with just sequences of films on Saturday. What stands out to you among that batch?
I think probably just the variety. We do have some different composers throughout that night. It's not just Herman. It's a smattering. We do have some Herman with North by Northwest and a little bit of Vertigo, but we have Dmitri Tiomkin with Dial M for Murder and Strangers on a Train and Lynn Murray with To Catch a Thief, and I think you get a much more eclectic mix of Hollywood film scores that night. And, you know, for me, having to study and learn the different scores and really being able to really see how different each composer approached the same problem, the same challenge as far as scoring for film was very interesting. You know, Herman, I think, is so wonderful in that he's so economical and so logical, and he has this huge orchestra, but he only uses it in very key moments, and a lot of the score is very sparsely orchestrated. You hear only the five clarinets or just the strings or the flutes or the trombones, and in the big moments, then he really brings out the full force of the orchestra. The other scores are much more thickly orchestrated. The orchestra is playing a lot all the time, and it creates a much different effect, a much more, I think, generic Hollywood sound as we're accustomed to. And it's great in its own right, and I think it's very interesting. You'll be able to see the difference between all the different composers all writing for Hitchcock.
Stephen, was that a result of some sort of a falling out between Herman and Hitchcock, or was it just before he met Herman, or did these from different periods?
Well,
just decided to try something different.
The scores that they'll be playing on Saturday night, the ones that aren't by Bernard Herman, do precede their collaboration. Unfortunately, the two men did have a falling out over a movie called, appropriately enough, Torn Curtain. And that's a whole chapter in my book, but let's just say that Benny felt so confident that he was doing the right thing that he sort of ignored the directive that Hitchcock had given him. Hitchcock was under pressure to have a more commercial-sounding score for this movie, and Bernard Herman was not the guy you hired if you wanted a sort of Henry Mancini-esque, you know, score, good as those can be, that have a very memorable tune that someone can cover as a pop song. And I think that's what the studio wanted, and that wasn't what Bernard Herman did. So when Hitchcock heard what Herman had written, sadly, that was the end of their collaboration. Fortunately, the eight films that precede it, The Birds, Marnie, Vertigo, Wrong Man, North by Northwest, so many are masterpieces and still textbook examples of how cinema and music work together.
Stephen Smith, author of A Heart at Fire Center, The Life and Music of Bernard Herrmann, at your local bookstore. Why don't you pick that up and learn more, and I'm sure a lot of trivia about the actual making of these films. Thanks for taking some time today.
My pleasure.
I'm sure you've had a fun week. And Joshua Gerson, who once again is conducting the premiere of Vertigo to a live performance of the San Francisco Symphony tomorrow night, and then Hitchcock's Greatest Hits on Saturday at 8. Joshua, I wish you best. I wish you good cueing for coming up performances.
Thank you very much.
And
thanks for having me, too.
I look forward to seeing Vertigo tomorrow night. Information at sfsymphony.org. Let's go out with a little music of the classic film Vertigo. Hitchcock's film, you can't see it on the radio, but you can hear the wonderful music of Bernard Herrmann. music of Bernard Herrmann. You can catch live tomorrow in Davies Symphony Hall, sfsymphony.org, to learn more about the screening of Vertigo with the San Francisco Symphony. David LaTulipe here with Open Air, and Peter Robinson, not such a scary character, but he's going to offer us some background on this Halloween 2013 and years before. Hi, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here. And I always think that Hitchcock should have written a movie called Halloween. That music takes you just into that type of place. But this time of year, I think, is an interesting season because it straddles between autumn and winter. There's plenty, there's paucity. And then if we look back over the years, Halloween, in fact, goes back to the Celtic period and to a feast when people did wear costumes and they did hang around bonfires and celebrate. But eventually, as the Christian movement, particularly under Pope Gregory III, moved in, November the 1st became designated as All Saints' Day. And the day before was All Souls' Day, where the ghosts of the past maybe came back to visit or haunt us. In fact, go south of the border, and you have the Day of the Dead, or cross over to Europe, and you have Remembrance Day. In England, it's called Poppy Day because it marked the end of the First World War, and people wear poppies. Whereas here, that is transferred to November the 11th, the 11th day, the 11th hour of the 11th month, when the fighting and the guns finally halted. But I think no real celebration of Halloween is complete without a Halloween story, a story of transformation when ghosts of the past sometimes come back to haunt us. And this particular story takes place in times gone by when a young princess, Princess Hilary, was walking in the grounds of the castle. She essentially was an eco-feminist who one day, while playing at the pond near the castle, she tossed her golden ball into the air. But sadly, it fell in the water and sunk to the bottom of the pool. She pondered about her loss as she wondered about her queendom. What would it be if women were in a position of power? But as she was thinking, a frog popped up out of nowhere and said, "I can get your ball back for you." "No, no," she said, "I would never enslave a member of another species to work for my selfish desires." The frog said, "Well, what if we made a deal on a contingency basis? I'd get your ball back for you if you would do me a favour in return." It was Halloween, and things had an eerie feel to them. The princess readily agreed to this equitable arrangement. So the frog dived under the water and emerged with the golden ball in his mouth. He spit the ball onto the shore and said, "Now I have done you a favour. I'd like to explore your views on physical attraction between the species." The princess couldn't imagine what the frog was talking about. The frog interrupted, "I'm not really a frog. I'm really a man, but an evil sorcerer cast a spell on me Halloween 1 year ago. And while my frog form is no better or worse, only different from my human form, I would like to return to the human race. But the only way I could break the spell is a kiss from a princess." The princess thought for a moment about whether sexual harassment could take place between the species, but her heart went out to the frog for his predicament. She bent down and kissed the frog on his forehead. Instantly, the frog grew and changed, and there, standing in the water where the frog had been, was a man dressed for duck shooting. He had a large shotgun under his arm, wore a camouflage jacket. He was late middle-aged, vertically challenged, and losing a little hair on top of his head. In fact, he even had a cap that said, "Dick C." The princess was taken aback. She said, "I'm sorry if this sounds rather upper class, but I don't understand it. I thought sorcerers don't usually cast people like you. They usually cast princes under their spell." "Ordinarily, yes, but this time the target was me. I'm just an innocent old-time politician. I used to work in the White House, and now I've become a real estate developer. The sorcerer thought I was cheating him about a property line dispute, similar to the way we redistricted voting precincts in Texas. So the sorcerer invited me for a round of golf, and just as I was about to tee off, he transformed me. But my time as a frog wasn't wasted, you know. I've gotten to know every square of these beautiful woods, and I've decided it would make an ideal spot for an office, park, condo, resort complex. The location is great. The numbers crunch perfectly. The bank wouldn't lend me any money as a frog, but now, in my human form again, they'll be eating out of my hand. A real sweet deal. Let me tell you, this is going to be a big project. Just drain the pond, cut down 80% of the trees, get easements. The frog developer, come old-time politician, was cut short when the princess shoved the golden ball back in his mouth, then pushed him back underwater and held him down until he sunk. As she walked back to the castle on that Halloween evening, she marvelled at the number of good deeds a person could do in just one day. And while someone might have noticed that the frog was gone, no one would ever miss the real estate dealer who was once a politician. So if you're going to a Halloween party this evening, remember, if you see a frog, better to be kissed by a fool than fooled by a kiss.
Very nice, Peter. A story for Halloween with a bit of a political bent. We thank you for that. Lots of ghosts involved in fall Shakespeare. I wish we had some more time to discuss it, but there's a Macbeth performance, I understand, that you've recently seen.
Yes, Kenneth Branagh playing Macbeth. It's part of the National Theatre production. It's performed at both the Lark Theatre and the Kabuki, and is just a scary, wary production. So if you want to see the witches, bubble, bubble, toil and trouble, go to Macbeth this week, playing at the National Theatre's production on screen at the Kabuki and also at the Lark Theatre.
Thanks so much, Peter. We'll hear from you again soon. You mentioned earlier other celebrations around this Halloween holiday, which include All Souls Day, All Saints Day. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that the San Francisco Symphony is also having their Day of the Dead, the Dios de los Muertos, on Saturday. Donato Cabrera is conducting, with Nathaniel Stukes narrating his wonderful work, The Composer is Dead, But an Español, El Compositor Está Muerto. Also music of Arvo Pärt and Marquez as part of that program, sfsymphony.org. Thanks to Neil Swinkles for making things happen smoothly during productions of Open Air. Reminder, you can catch most episodes at our website, kalw.org. Send me some show suggestions there as well. And do join me beginning next Monday at 9 p.m. We're continuing our series, Explorations in Music. The subject this time, the string quartet in a time of war, concentrating mostly on the music of Benjamin Britten. And that'll be with the Alexander String Quartet once again and the always entertaining and informative Dr. Robert Greenberg. Explorations in Music, Mondays at 9 in November and December here on KALW. I'm David Latulippe. Join me for that, and join me next week for Open Air on KALW.